So I think sometimes, though, when we're thinking about reasons that we're hesitant to be truthful, I think some of them are connected to our desire to be kind or faithful or good, because sometimes the issues are very messy. And so our reluctance results from a desire to protect someone, not ourselves necessarily, but someone else, especially if they're a vulnerable person. Things become especially difficult when speaking truthfully will negatively impact the family of the person involved, especially in close community. So I think we really struggle with knowing how to be truthful under those circumstances and how much can be shared. I mean, I think this is a dilemma most of the time. It's like, just how much do we have to share when someone has been caught in some significant wrongdoing, but the rest of the family then gets dragged into it and so on. So I think those are hard questions. But I think one of the more complicated reasons people hesitate to speak truthfully is because they want to protect God or God's reputation. And so we cover over difficult circumstances by exaggeration or by overlooking some important details. Maybe, you know, when you're talking about how God is blessing ministry, we kind of underplay the fact that there's a stack of unpaid bills, you know, those kind of things. Or I was actually teaching a session on truthfulness with a group of pastors and church leaders, and one woman was talking about having been visiting her brother who was in the late stages of cancer in the hospital. And the woman down the hall was a Muslim woman who was also late stage cancer. And the Christian student was sharing her testimony with her in the gospel and told her about her sick brother. And the Muslim woman responded, and actually she was healed, and which was pretty amazing. The Christian woman's brother died. And the student told the Muslim woman that her brother had been healed. And she said, you know, Dr. Pohl, is that okay? And it was like, no. but her question was, she didn't want to spoil the testimony. You know, the woman had responded, she was open to becoming a Christian and so on, so she just kind of fabricated this, which I was just, and I thought, you know, she was really trying to cover for God. You know, like God didn't do it the way she had sort of assured the woman. And so she was, so she didn't want to ruin the testimony to Jesus' power and so on. So I think sometimes we kind of try to cover for God. I think there are other times when we hesitate to tell the truth because we know both the truth teller and the truth receiver are fallible and finite. We're aware that we ourselves can get things wrong sometimes, or they can, whether the facts or the interpretation. And I think this is where power differences also become very significant. For some people, speaking the truth can be much more costly than for others, and that's what happens in staff. So you can stay here as long as you do this and this, you know, and so on. So those with power can demand truthfulness but not offer it themselves, and I think that's a very difficult dynamic. And that's especially true when there's a very charismatic leader involved, where they're continually asking for people to be truthful, but they themselves are sort of above it. So truthful speech can be difficult when there are significant power differences between parties, or when one party has control over the resources that the other person needs. And whether we're speaking into a situation of entrenched power or we're the ones holding power, we need to be attentive to the significance of power dynamics in a commitment to being truthful. And I think one of the other ones that's hard and a little bit subtle is that sometimes people are involved in deception kind of for the good of the larger congregation. And this may be some of what you were talking about. I've heard stories about, you know, congregations that move too slowly to adopt something or whatever, or to agree to something, or they don't capture the vision. So some of the leaders decide, well, the congregation doesn't really need to know about all of this and so on. I think it becomes a form of presumption that sort of short circuits the process and dishonors the community. That can happen also with a small group in the community. The one that I heard was that a small group in the church was trying to do some really good social action kinds of things, and the congregation just felt like it kept putting up roadblocks And finally, the small group just decided to kind of go ahead and stop reporting all of it and just, you know, kind of live with that. And fortunately for them, it was the bank that intervened. They weren't doing anything dishonest. They weren't, you know, they weren't mismanaging funds or anything, but they weren't giving a strict accounting. And it ultimately was an outside structure that kind of called them to account, and it turned out to be helpful. But I think there are times where we can decide that what we're doing is so important for the kingdom that we don't need to bother with bringing everybody in, especially if there are obstructions. So I think there are also other times when, because we've seen truth-telling misused and often associated with authority, we're afraid of misappropriating spiritual authority. We're just not exactly sure how to do it, because sometimes we've seen people in authority really do truth-telling in inappropriate, unhelpful, or cruel ways. But then, of course, there are times when people make it very clear that they don't really want to hear the truth. And that can also make us hesitant. I think also in cultures that enthusiastically endorse a kind of whatever-it-takes approach to problem-solving, dishonesty is actually frequently rewarded. Getting the job done, whatever it takes. How often do we hear people say that, or actually say to ourselves, we'll do it. We'll do whatever it takes to get this done. Actually, that sounds, that has a real ring of commitment and energy, but I think it leaves unanswered major questions about whether we've lost the sense that Martin Luther King said, that the end is pre-existent in the means. If you don't have a good way of getting there, if you'll do whatever it takes to get to a goal, you're likely to miss the goal, because the goal has to be kind of pre-existent in how you get there. And so be very careful not to be kind of enamored with that kind of whatever it takes, which means we'll do anything to get it, because the goal is a worthy goal. Well, no, actually we'll end up missing the goal if we use improper means. So similarly, a strong pragmatic bent that first asks about whether something works is an inadequate moral framework for addressing truth and dishonesty. If the job is important enough, do we overlook small deceptions and lies that were employed? And I think sometimes, because we're also extremely individualistic in our orientation, we do not recognize the impact this has on community. So we'll kind of, you know, if it works, we'll do it, and oh well. There's certain deception or dishonesty, and really you're creating a culture of dishonesty in doing that. I think also, though, sometimes we're just lazy. We don't really care enough to take on the trouble of being truthful with people. But we also don't want the reputation as sort of the truth police, or tattletales or busybodies. And so it's a, you know, it's a complicated thing. But often we resist truthfulness because we want people to like us. And in other settings, we're, especially about ourselves, we're ashamed, but we don't really want to stop what we're doing. So as I said before, truthful communities will not necessarily be tidy. They'll be loose threads and rough edges, because those communities aren't willing to cover over the difficulties or kind of cover the wounds lightly and pretend that everything's okay.
How about the concept of do not judge?
Yeah, how about it? I think at this point, Christians have been kind of pushed into a corner on that one. Because, and we are called not to judge in the sense, in the way that God judges. We are called to discern between good and evil and to speak that. So we still make judgments, not in terms of casting someone out or something, but in terms of naming what's good and what's evil. I think we need to, and when people are doing good and bad things, I think we need to.
Because that's a lot of times that's the phrase people say, do not judge, we are not called to judge.
Right, right. Yeah. And it ends up, so it sort of, it fits with the emphasis on tolerance of sort of like whatever. And in many ways, that's not caring enough to actually to discern between good and bad. Yeah. Let me say a few more things about truthfulness. I think communities that love the truth will build people up. As I said before, a lot of the truth that isn't told is positive. We could train ourselves to notice and articulate our experiences of goodness and grace as aspects of truthfulness. This could be a source of enormous encouragement within congregations and teams. And I think connects with what we were talking about in the first sessions about building affirmation, gratitude into the life of the community. And what we want here is truthful affirmation, not flattery, but truthful affirmation that sees the good, recognizes it, names it, and so on. I think in a community that really practices telling encouraging truths to one another, an environment is shaped where then it's easier to hear and speak about the harder truths. As we're talking about the goodness that we see, it's easier then to talk about the difficulties. Because the difficulties are not the only word that's spoken about someone or something. It's important to remember that truth-telling can be quickly deformed when what we say is only part of the truth. And I think that's what criticism often is. It's only a piece of the truth about somebody. But if you've, again, kind of woven a whole fabric of truthfulness, then it's possible to address the problems, but it's within a larger context of recognizing the ways in which God's working in that person's life, and it's really God shining through, and so on. Wise and good communities will make sure that in difficult or contested situations where discerning truth and speaking truth are hard, most of it will be face-to-face. Because we depend on much more than words to understand what a person is saying and means, we need settings in which we can read body language for adequate discernment. And I think that's part of what makes email so problematic when we're dealing with problems. And texts are beyond mention, right? It's too cryptic. There's not enough there to work with. The other thing is that that's recorded. And so the person reads over and over again the criticism or the whatever. But it has no context. It's just the words. Face-to-face communication, even though it can be difficult, is really important in these situations. And because truth is not only propositional, but also narratival and relational, it fits in a story, it fits in a relationship, the way something is said is part of the truth of what is being said. And so again, we have to be more attentive to context, to the story, to the history and relationships when we're trying to figure out what's fitting and true. And I think sometimes we can miss the truth because we're blind to it. And we need to be more reflective about what it is we're looking for and what we're seeing. And I think one of the roles of pastors and leaders is to help people see what God is doing, even when it doesn't fit their expectations. One of the women in the project, when we were working on the book, told a story about that her church had established this youth program that was oriented toward the kids in the church. And actually, it had ended up being an extremely successful youth program, but it attracted kind of the wrong set of kids. It wasn't the church kids that came, it was the neighborhood kids.
Wow.
And so
you can't do that when you're young.
I know. What she had been able to do was to help the congregation see that it had been a successful outreach. It just wasn't what they were actually aiming for. But that's in a sense kind of framing the experience of it. I mean, you can still name that it wasn't successful in the way you thought it was, but it gives you an opportunity to celebrate and be grateful for what God has done, even if it didn't look like your original plans. So sometimes the question is, which truths do we give our attention to? I mean, both of those things were true about the children, you know, the youth program. One, that it didn't work with the church kids, but two, that it did work with these other kids. So in our last few minutes, let's talk about how we can foster an environment or culture of truthful living. How we can cultivate a culture of truthful living. The Quakers historically have been very good on this, and you can go onto websites and so on if you look at truthful living in Quakers. They've got some very helpful suggestions, like listening to the truth in the words of others. Just much more listening by slowing down and paying attention. Practicing so that we can speak the truth as we discern it with cordiality, kindness, and love. So, what else? For You've talked a lot about accountability groups and finding friends who will speak into your life, which I think is important.
I think having a daily personal time of confession,
yeah.
just naming your sin
yes.
to God,
yes.
just
Good.
As a practice.
Good. I think we can all learn better the role of silence. In fact, Greg Jones, who was the dean at Duke, said that he and his students decided to only speak the truth for a week.
Wow.
They discovered really fast how quickly being silent was important, because so much of what we say is not fully true. And so if you only spoke what was true, you'd really say quite a lot less. But truthfulness, as Luce Meats has said, truthfulness is demanded from us about the things that we ought to speak about at all. Obedience, he says, to the biblical command against lying does not call us to be blabbermouths. A community that loves the truth will understand the wisdom of silence and the grace of only speaking a word as it's useful. Truthfulness does not mean that we expose or disclose everything to everyone. And there are some things that simply should never be said. In seeking truthfulness, then, within relationships, we need to use our words with care. And I think this is where we probably should have saved a little bit more time to talk about gossip, because it's such a difficult problem in churches oftentimes. Gossip and the breaking of confidences, which is a breach of fidelity. We need to avoid gossip, avoid breaking confidences, avoid disparaging words about others. And I think gossip in particular is challenging, partly because it often comes in the form of prayer requests or, right? And,
prayer requests.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it really is. And gossip, I think, one way of understanding it is it can be speaking truthfully, but it's speaking truthfully to the wrong people. It's, you know, it's speaking truthfully to people who have nothing to do with it, and so on. And Cicela Bock, in her classic book on lying, wrote, "To be truthful does not mean telling the truths to all comers. Silence and discretion, respect for the privacy and for the feelings of others, must naturally govern what is spoken. The gossip one conveys and the malicious reports one spreads may be true without therefore being excusable." So being very careful about that. And really, I think, again, being kind of intentional in creating cultures that simply don't practice that. And I think it's hard, because people like to be in the know, and they like to share.
That's one of the ways we gain intimacy.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And so being very, very careful about what we do with our words and who we speak to about things. I think I shared very briefly last night in the dinner time that one of the structures that I've seen that invites truthfulness and truthful living on a staff was the one that Keith Wasserman taught me with his community with homeless people. Their staff, which is about 25 people, when they have their business meetings, maybe I also mentioned it here, but when they have their business staff meetings every week, they go around and ask about whether all of the relationships are clear. And then being careful that the disagreements don't fester. But, you know, having a structure just in the week that you know you're not going to be able to go longer than a week without addressing these things. And they simply hold up the meeting until they've made arrangements for those things. So people do not sort out their issues in front of people. That's not how it works. But they do have to make arrangements to work it through. So, and I think preaching can be an important structure for ongoing formation and truthfulness. Truth-telling from the pulpit really does help to form the identity of a community.